Nevada. Hey, Bill. Come on, you.
Welcome to the Back 9 Report, presented by eDraft.com.
Hello, and welcome to the Back 9 Report. My name is Fred, and I am an unrepentant and practicing golfaholic. Normally, my co-host Carlos Torres opens every show, but tonight he is cruising around the Caribbean on a big boat that can't be bothered with talking golf. Hopefully, he doesn't run ashore, capsize, or get lost in the Bermuda Triangle, and will rejoin us next week. Filling in for Carlos is our friend from across the pond, special co-host and European golf guru, Kieran Clark. Welcome, Mr. Clark.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Altvater, and I'm pleased to be joining you as always, and obviously we're now right in the meat of the season. We have the U.S. Women's Open this week, the Scottish Open down the road from me in Gullen, and obviously we're building towards the Open Championship next week at St. Andrews, but a lot's been going on. Donald Trump's been causing bother, and Rory McIlroy, what did he do? What was he thinking? So much to discuss, and I'm looking forward to it.
Well, Kieran, just as you mentioned, there is a tremendous amount of golf news to cover tonight, so let's get right to it by recapping last weekend's golf tournaments on the various tours around the world in this week's Backspin. The PGA Tour stopped at the Greenbrier. Soft, wet conditions made TPC Old White play slightly easier last week. Tee balls would stay on the fairway, and they were firing darts at the pins on the soft greens. Scoring was low. The cut on Friday came at minus two, with 77 players making weekend play. Four players ended regulation on Sunday tied at 13 under par. Danny Lee, Kevin Kisner, Robert Streb, and David Hearn entered a sudden-death playoff to determine the winner. Lee outlasted the other three with a birdie on the first playoff hole, number 18, and a par 5 at number 17 that were good enough for the win. A side note involved Robert Streb's putter. Streb shot a 65 on Sunday by making five birdie putts on the back nine using his 56-degree sand wedge after breaking his putter on the ninth hole when he tossed it at his bag next to the green. Streb said, "I hit the bottom of the bag and the head went flying. It was not my intent, but that was what happened, and so I said, well, let's see what we can do with the wedge." He three-putted number 17 for bogey but got into playoff with a six-foot birdie putt at number 18. Streb was allowed a replacement putter for the playoff, but he never got to use it after missing the green. The big news of the week, though, was involved Tiger Woods. He of the 85 at Muirfield Village in the Memorial and 80 at Chambers Bay in the U.S. Open shot three rounds under par, posting minus seven and finished T32 for the week. A lone double bogey on Saturday led to a one-over par 71 and spoiled any hopes he had of contending on Sunday. He does, however, take a lot of confidence and momentum with him for next week's Open Championship. Speaking of the Open Championship, four players, Danny Lee, David Hearn, James Haught, and Greg Owen, all earned spots in the field at St. Andrews, which I believe is in your backyard, Kieran.
Well, it certainly is, just down the road, and I was there on Friday. But yes, fantastic win for Danny Lee, who obviously was a player we go back a number of years ago now where we felt he has such great promise after winning the U.S. Amateur, the youngest player to ever win the U.S. Amateur. And obviously he also won the Johnnie Walker Classic down in Australia when an amateur. But never quite worked out for him in terms of being a professional. He's had ups and downs, played in the Web.com Tour and the PGA Tour, also spent time in the European Tour. But this is a real breakthrough for him. Obviously secured his place in the Tour for a couple of years, gets him into the Masters and really opens doors. So a fantastic win for him. Only 24 years old, still plenty of time for him to fulfill some of that great early potential that he had. But Kevin Kisner, you know, that's his third playoff loss of this year. You know, having lost to Jim Furyk at the Heritage and also at the Players' Championship. So he's been really consistent. He's been knocking on doors, but just one of them is yet to break down. And I read something earlier on today, I believe it was from Doug Ferguson of the Associated Press on Twitter, who said that you have to go back to 1937 to find the last player who lost three playoffs in a year on the PGA Tour. And that was Horton Smith, who won the first Masters tournament back in 1934. So Kevin Kisner, the guy keeps knocking on the door. One of these days it's going to open, he's going to get that first victory. But, of course, Robert Streb, that was a remarkable tale with the wedge. And I think in the end, Fred, had he had that wedge in the bag, maybe a putt to a hole that with the on the playoff. He sure used that and made that one of the great wins of all time with a wedge. He actually putted quite well for the most part. But on Tiger, obviously, that was the interesting story about, you know, how is he going to play after that disaster at the US Open and at the Memorial Tournament. And Tiger looked, he looked like a golfer again, quite frankly. You know, he played very solidly throughout the week. His irons are very good. Still a little bit errant off the tee at times. He has a lot of issue with blocking the driver to the right and into the left, trying to compensate for it. So I think his head drops a bit too much. That's always been a problem for Tiger. But certainly it was very encouraging for him. And if he, you know, if he takes it for him to St Andrews, well, you never know what can happen there. He might not win St Andrews, but I think he'll have a much more respectable performance there than he had at Chambers Bay a fortnight ago. So the Green Prior, you know, it's a great property. It's a lovely place, a very good golf course. A little bit too soft, perhaps, for the, you know, for real testing conditions, but it's certainly a great event, and Danny Lee was a deserving champion.
On the French, on the European Tour, the European Tour has traveled to France for the Alstom Open de France. Austria's Bernd Wiesberger picked up his third career European Tour win at the course that will host the 2018 Ryder Cup. The win moves him to number 23 in the official world golf ranking and number 4 in the Race to Dubai. He began the day 3 shots back of the leader, but his final round 6 under par 65 gave him a 3-shot victory over James Morrison. Morrison, Jakob Ensil, Rafa Cabrera-Bello all earn exemptions into the Open Championship next week. European Tour next moves to Gaillon for the Scottish Open, and you're going to talk a little bit more about that and also a little bit about the French Open.
Yes, indeed, and the French Open is always one of the highlights on the European Tour calendar. Unquestionably one of the finest golf courses on the European Tour schedule. As you'll say, he said it will play the host the Ryder Cup in 3 years' time. And it's a tremendous course, and it has that really exciting finish with the water and real testing right to the end. So no lead's really safe on that course. But Bernd Wiesberger from Austria, you know, a player who he played this brilliantly. You know, they had those 5 birdies in the front 9 to pull clear, and in the back 9 he was solid throughout, and he birdied the fearsome 18th hole, that water short of the green, between the fairway and the green, and he birdied the last hole to really get the icing on the cake there and complete a great victory. He's a player who obviously, he's threatened in the past a lot. I'm surprised he only has 3 wins in the tour. I think that will increase over time. Of course, you'll remember last year at the PGA Championship at Valhalla, he was alongside Rory McIlroy in the final pairing at the major last August. So he fell apart a little bit on the Sunday, had a poor day, but he's certainly someone who can challenge in the big events, and we might see him maybe contend at the Open or even the PGA at Whistling Straits. And a player who had success, for me the big story as well, is that when was also Martin Kaymer, who's had a really poor season. The last couple of 3 months have been really poor from missing an awful lot of cuts. But he came back to form. He's a former winner of the French Open, and he finished in 4th in the end. And of course, he's someone who has a great record at the old course, having won Dunhill Links. And he also obviously won the PGA Championship at Whistling Straits. So he's back in form at just the right time of year. And Martin Kaymer is one of these interesting players who he disappears for a year or two or a couple of months, and then suddenly he pops up out of nowhere and wins a big event, whether it be a major or a Players' Championship. And don't be surprised if he does that at the Open or the PGA again in a few weeks' time. And also Rafa Cabrera-Bello, that was a thing for me as well. He shot 29 on the back nine at Le Golf National, including 2 eagles in that nine, which is remarkable, to secure a place in the Open Championship at St Andrews. So that was, he shot through the field there on the back nine and claimed that last spot alongside James Morrison and Jakob Van Zyl. And so it's, but for Bernd Wiesberger, a guy who I think is one of these players who he's now back being a winner again on the European Tour. He's a consistent player, player with a lot of potential. Now it's time for him to maybe elevate himself to the next level, and he might very well do that at St Andrews or Whistling Straits in a few weeks.
Yeah, you make a really good point there about Martin Kaymer. He's been really quiet this year, and
he's
due to pop up and make some noise, isn't he?
Definitely.
Hey, the web.com, a pair of Texans had to travel clear up to Nova Scotia to do battle for the title at the Nova Scotia Open. Abraham Anser rolled in a 15-foot birdie putt on the first playoff hole to beat Bronson Burgoon for his first professional win. Jason Allred, Travis Bertoni, and D.H. Lee were all in the house at 12-under and getting ready for the overtime session as the two were at 12-under, but they just didn't weren't able to get it done. So Anser canned a 30-footer for birdie to break the tie, and then watched as Burgoon rolled in a 10-foot on top to join the Tour's third playoff this year and the second in Halifax in many years. I was just trying to cozy mine in there because they can't get away from you quickly, said Answer. I knew it was for a potential win, but I was thinking Bronson was going to make his. It's not the kind of putt you want to be aggressive with. The win was the first of his professional, worth $117,000. Vaughn in the number four on the money list with $192,000. And so this should probably be enough to get him his PGA Tour card for the 2015-2016 season, Kieran.
Yeah, and it's massive for him. You know, and it really came out of nowhere as such because he only made three cuts in his last nine starts on the Web.com Tour. So, you know, he just came to form in Canada and really played well to get a victory. And because he had a six-way tie for the lead after 54 holes, which I believe is a record on the Web.com Tour. So it was a very congested leaderboard, as it so often is on that tour. Very competitive. These young players try and get their way, get their punch their ticket onto the PGA Tour. But one name that stood out to me also on the leaderboard, Fred, was that of Oliver Goss, who is a young Australian player who you remember was the runner-up in the US Amateur a couple of years ago in 2013. He actually made the cut last year in the Open, in the Masters, actually, I should say. And a player who has a lot of potential. He's turned professional. He already has a win on the PGA of Australia as an amateur. And he finished sixth in Nova Scotia. So he's a guy who might just break through as well this year at some point. But obviously a great win for the man. And obviously we'll see him on the PGA Tour next year probably.
Kieran, something I was really happy to see on the Ladies European Tour. They were in England for the ISPS Handa Ladies European Masters. American-born Beth Allen shot a final round of 67 to come from five shots behind the overnight leader Carolyn Masson and claim her first professional title at the ISPS Handa Ladies European Masters. Allen fired five birdies on the front nine at Buckinghamshire Golf Club and picked up another on 14 before making bogey on 15 and setting the clubhouse target at 12 under par. Allen, as you know, is from San Diego but now resides in Scotland. Said, I wasn't sure if I was ever going to happen, so I'm really, really happy. I've waited a long time for this, and I want it so, so bad. I'm ecstatic. And we are just so ecstatic for her. She had finished second three times on the Ladies European Tour, but her secret weapon was her new caddy, Sophie Gustafson, the 26-time tournament winner who has represented Europe eight times in the Solheim Cup, and this year will be one of Karen Koch's vice-captains at St. Helens Row in Germany, was on the bag, advising Allen as she plotted her way around the Buckinghamshire layout. Kieran, this is a great story. I had a chance to sit and talk with Beth Allen at some length last year, and, you know, she donated one of her kidneys to her brother a few years ago and required several months away from golf and rehabbing to get back to the top of her game. And I just think this is such a wonderful story. I'm so, so happy for her.
Well, I completely agree, Fred, and Beth is certainly one of the most popular players on the Ladies European Tour, and obviously the remarkable thing for her 4 years ago, you know, and came back from that and has continued to, you know, continue to have a strong professional career. Now to get that victory takes to another level. A very popular character, a very likable character, and obviously having, you know, Sophie Gustafson on the bag is a quite an amazing little fact, and obviously her experience was invaluable down the stretch, being such a successful player herself. Also had the world number one amateur, Leona Maguire, very close to winning the tournament as well. And she was right up there with Beth Allen, who set the clubhouse target, but a drop shot in the last just prevented the 20-year-old from perhaps matching a playoff. But there are other great stories as well that week at Buckinghamshire, including Dame Laura Davies, who had a hole-in-one on the first hole on Sunday and finished in a tie for seventh in the end. And you know, there's certainly still life in the 51-year-old who will be inducted into the World Golf Hall of Fame on Monday in St. Andrews, and she's hoping to make a return to the Solheim Cup team this year. So good chance that she does it because she's still playing some fantastic golf. And also, we talk about older English players, young stars, Charlie Hull, who was in great position after 36 holes there, but had a really poor weekend, shot 77 and 78 to fall right out of contention on Saturday and Sunday. You know, that's perhaps just a blip in her form, but you know, it is something to address ahead of the Women's Scottish Open at Dundonald and the Women's British Open at Turnberry, which is coming up in just the next few weeks. So a big period of the season now for these players, obviously with the US Women's Open coming up this week. So but certainly for Charlie Hart, it's a bit of a concern that weekend. But for Beth Allen, a fantastic victory. It was one of the best stories of the year on all tours, I would say.
That wraps up the weekend backspin. Vincent, let's take a short break, and we'll come back with the Par 5 news presented by United Golf Network.
you for listening to the Back Nine Report presented by eDraft.com. We'll be right back. Don't forget to check out our co-hosts on Twitter by clicking their names in the episode description. Now, back to the show.
Kieran, I am going to yield the honor of the opening drive on the Par 5 News presented by United Golf Network to you. I believe you're going to tell us something about Donald Trump, who is in the headlines again.
Well, you know, Freddie, he has a habit of being in the headlines, doesn't he? He's very good at that. It's one of his great talents in life is being noticed. And he has certainly been noticed in the past couple of weeks, obviously running for president, but really it was inflamed in the past week or so. But, yeah, unfortunately, a negative story to start off our Par 5 News tonight. And as everyone will be aware, I would suspect by now, Donald Trump made some extremely brazen, I guess you could say, quite frankly, offensive comments regarding Mexican immigrants that went beyond, I would say, all sense of rational political debate. There is a fundamental difference between making a strong point on immigration, between that and spouting racial rhetoric, which I think he pretty much did in that case. And not just those comments, but also the fact that he shared a tweet on his Twitter account regarding Jeb Bush's wife, who is also Mexican, which claimed that she was a Mexican illegal herself. So Donald Trump certainly got himself in a bit of bother with this. I'm not even going to justify what he said in those initial comments by quoting them. He has doubled down those comments and actually reaffirmed what he said today. But the words are out there if you wish to read them. But, of course, it's certainly not the first time he said something of this nature that could be construed as being offensive or controversial. But his comments are obviously now even more heavily scrutinized due to his campaign to become the Republican nominee for the 2016 U.S. presidential election. And quite frankly, Trump is a somewhat cartoonish figure. He's an egotist who will see just about anything to get himself noticed in the headlines on the news, and that's how he builds up his brand, and in the end, that's in turn how he makes a lot of money. The man has no filter because he simply lacks class. His wealth has continually bought him a platform, most recently within the game of golf, where he's now linked to 17 leading golf courses around the world, including Turnberry in Scotland and Doral Resort in Florida. His whole blusterous persona would be laughable if he didn't have so much influence. And by association, Trump's presence is damaging to the game of golf and, dare I say it, the Republican Party itself in the U.S. In the aftermath of those comments, Trump was quick to state that the golf world fully supported him and that they knew he was right, in his words, which prompted a very swift response and joint statement from the PGA of America, LPGA, PGA Tour, and United States Golf Association. That statement read, in response to Mr. Trump's comments about the golf industry knowing he is right in regards to his recent statements about Mexican immigrants, we feel compelled to clarify that those remarks do not reflect the view of our organizations. The statement continued, while the LPGA, PGA of America, PGA Tour, and USGA do not usually comment on presidential politics, Mr. Trump's comments are inconsistent with our strong commitment to an inclusive and welcoming environment in the game of golf. So golf is distancing itself from Donald Trump, thankfully. And today it was confirmed that the PGA's Grand Slam of Golf, which was due to be played on Trump's Los Angeles course later this year, will move to another venue. While the LPGA released a statement this evening that suggested they would have moved to try and change the venue for the upcoming Women's British Open from Turnberry, had time logistics allowed them to do so. It's only 2.5 weeks away until that championship, so it's not realistic to move it in that time period. But however, we are yet to hear anything on the subject from the European Tour or indeed the RNA, with the Scottish Open widely expected to be held at Trump International up in Aberdeenshire in the coming years, probably 2017. In addition to Turnberry's important role in the Open Championship rotation, there are questions to be answered, and it is certainly an issue that will have to be addressed by both Keith Pelly and Martin Slumbers, who will soon be taking charge of those two respective organisations. In addition to his Mexican comments, Trump has also weighed in on the future of golf. The governing bodies and any reasonable individual wish the game to become even more inclusive to both genders, all races, and people from all economic backgrounds. However, for Trump, the game should be elitist and cater to the rich and powerful within our society. He stated that in an interview with Fortune magazine recently. His view of our sport is almost as warped as his views on just about everything else. ultimately, as far as I'm concerned, Trump doesn't represent decently minded Americans, both liberal and conservative in political persuasion, nor does his view of golf reflect the vast majority of the sport and the approach required to enhance it and grow it going forward. Donald Trump quite simply represents Donald Trump, and what a tragic world that must be in his head. Quite simply, he will only go away if we ignore him, and it's time for golf to collectively make that stance.
Yeah, that's pretty well said, Kieran. What is the temperature on his statements there in Europe, you know, in Scotland and England, in the UK? What, you know, what's the temperature there?
I think they view them as being very inflammatory over here. You know, we're having similar issues with immigration in terms of from Africa and the Middle East coming through Europe into Britain. But you know, there is an argument to be made, and obviously a political point, about illegal immigration within the US and indeed in Europe. But I think there's a way to express it, and I think Donald Trump certainly crossed that line, as he often does. But Donald Trump is viewed largely as being a cartoonish, laughable figure in this country, and I think largely as the case also in the United States, from the outside looking in. But we'll wait and see what happens. Obviously, a European Tour will have to address this, I'm sure, this week at the Scottish Open, and obviously next week at the Open Championship. I'm sure Peter Dawson will be asked about it, with Turnberry being on the Open rotation. So you know, the aftermath and the effects of this are going to continue. But you know, in the end, Donald Trump is free to say whatever he wants to say. We have freedom of speech is something to be celebrated. However, he can say what he likes, but sometimes there have to be consequences to what you say, and certainly that's the case for Donald Trump at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, he's certainly a polarizing figure. I put a post on Back Nine blog about the problems he's causing for the PGA Tour, the PGA, the LPGA, and the USGA, and it created more comments and discussion than any piece I've ever written. It was totally amazing, actually. Moving on to item number two, Rory, as you mentioned in the opening, has a bit of bother. He was scheduled to play this week in the Scottish Open at Galan, but something happened on Saturday that changed his plans slightly. While playing a pickup game of soccer with some of his pals at home in Northern Ireland, he suffered a total rupture of the anterior talofibular ligament in his left ankle. Kieran, I'm no doctor, but that does not sound good to me. He posted in a picture on Instagram with his left foot encased in a boot cast and was leaning on crutches. He also officially announced his withdrawal from the Scottish Open. And he appears doubtful for the Open Championship next week, where he would be the defending champion. That is correct. Yes, he would be the defending champion. Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, I'm getting ahead of myself here. Sorry.
You're right the first time. You're always right.
Yep.
Don't correct yourself.
Just a little Alzheimer's there. Rory said, continuing to assess the extent of the injury and treatment plan day by day, the world's top-ranked golfer wrote, "Rehab already started, working hard to get back as soon as I can." As you know, the left ankle is crucial in his golf swing as power is transferred from the ground up and then his weight shifts onto that side in his follow-through. I actually did a little medical research here and found in the Journal of Athletic Training some conclusions about the rehab time of an injury of this sort. And a quote from that page: "In the studies that we examined, it took at least 6 weeks to 3 months before ligament healing occurred. However, at 6 weeks to 1 year after the injury, a large percentage of participants still had objective mechanical laxity and subjective ankle instability." And so I think what all that means is that, yeah, it can heal in about 6 weeks, but it may not fully heal for some time. And so 6 weeks, Kieran, puts us up to the WGC Bridgestone the week prior to the next major title defense of the PGA Championship at Whistling Straits, followed shortly by the FedEx Cup and the race to Dubai. So whether or not he can swing a golf club or even walk a hilly golf course like Whistling Straits looks doubtful indeed to me. Rory's 2015 season is in real danger of being over, it looks like to me, Kieran.
Yeah, I think that's certainly very, very true, Fred. And obviously, it's not just for the coming weeks, it's also the long-term impact of having an injury like that, because in the end, once you do that damage, it's much more likely to happen again. It's much easier to happen again in the future. And Richie Ramsay, European Tour player from Scotland, he had a very similar injury. He commented on it and his process of recovery and how long it took him not just to get back to just playing golf, but also feeling comfortable with playing golf itself. The technical side of having your left heel is obviously critical to your swing. And wait and see what happens with Rory. Obviously, it's a crushing blow, not just for him, but for us, for golf fans, for golf writers, everybody, because the story of him going to the Old Course next week and that rivalry with Jordan Spieth that was developing, that's now on hold, and that's really sad. I know people have kind of criticised him. Some people have said, well, he should be looking after himself and shouldn't be taking any risks. But in the end, these guys, they have to live a life. They can't be all wrapped up in protective packaging all the time. You know, you can walk down the street and fall and break your ankle, or you can break your ankle on a golf course. It's just, he wasn't skiing, he wasn't doing any extreme sport. He just having a kickabout of a football with his friends, and he just fell over. It's a real crushing blow for everybody, but particularly him, but also for the events in question. But for the game overall, it's certainly seemed to lose your number one player, and hopefully we get him back, not just back soon, but back healthy and back to his best very soon. The one player who also had a bit of a injury spell last week was Brooke Henderson, the 17-year-old on the LPGA Tour. It's been a bit of a mixed week for her. And she in June became the third youngest winner in the history of the Symetra Tour, which is a tour below the LPGA. And she was involved in a minor car accident last week, last Wednesday, in fact, which resulted in her having to withdraw from that week's event in Michigan. But fortunately, she'll be back competing in this week's U.S. Women's Open Championship, but she will also be participating in another major in just a few weeks' time. That's the good news for her. Because last week, the Ricoh Women's British Open confirmed that a special invitation had been awarded to her in recognition of what they stated as her impressive professional debut, which has included a tie for fifth at the recent Women's PGA Championship at Rochester. So certainly an impressive talent at the age of 17, perhaps in the same mould as Lydia Ko and players like that. And it will be fascinating to see how she can continue that early promise in her professional career. And it's fair to say, Fred, that she'll only enhance the Women's British Open. It will be certainly a thrill for golf fans over here to get a view of her at Turnberry in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, she's really playing well right now. And we're going to have the pleasure of actually hearing from her. Our man inside the ropes, Jeff Menor, is at the U.S. Women's Open this week in Lancaster Country Club. And he actually talked with Brooke a little bit earlier today, and we're going to have that interview just a little bit later in the show.
Fantastic.
Kieran, the PGA Tour is just becoming more and more like the old Peyton Place television soap opera. Every week seems to bring a new drama to light, and it appears that Phil Mickelson is doing his part this week. Mickelson's name popped up in the investigation of an illegal gambling operation. He's not been charged with a crime and is not under federal investigation, but a 56-year-old former sports gambling handicapper acting as a conduit for an offshore gambling operation pleaded guilty last week to laundering approximately $2.75 million of money that sources said belonged to Phil Mickelson. Just last year during the Memorial Tournament, Mickelson made off-the-course news when his name surfaced in an ongoing federal insider trading investigation, which also involved billionaire investment tycoon Carl Icahn and sports gambler entrepreneur Billy Walters. If you remember, Mickelson was apprehended by FBI agents as he strode off the 18th green at Muirfield Village and was taken for questioning. He was cleared of insider trading, and it's unclear whether federal authorities are still investigating him further in that matter. It was also rumored that Phil had some rather large gambling debts in 2004 and that Eli Callaway stepped in and gave Mickelson an $80 million endorsement contract to pay the debts and become Phil's sole equipment and clothing sponsor. At the time, Phil had just won his first major championship, the Masters, using Titleist equipment, and the change 1 week prior to the 2004 Ryder Cup was rapid and unexpected. You may also recall he played terribly on Hal Sutton's Ryder Cup team that suffered one of the worst losses ever to the Euros. There was much mumbling behind the scenes that Phil's change of equipment didn't help the U.S. efforts. This $2.75 million transfer is the first real evidence that Mickelson is involved in big-time gambling. But as my mother always used to say, where there is smoke, there is normally fire. There has been an awful lot of instances of near brushes with gamblers and unexplained money transactions with Phil over the years. I'll bet those generate a lot of heated exchanges in the Mickelson household. I don't know about you, Kieran, but my wife would go absolutely ballistic if I transferred a couple of million bucks to a gambler.
Well, you know, there's a reason why people call Phil the Frill. You know, it's always interesting, it's always different, there's always something going on. So I'm sure that Amy Middleton's probably used to it by now, and I think she's probably had a few gambling issues herself down the years, but certainly Phil is he's popping up in these stories all the time, and he's going to appear in the next Martin Scorsese gangster film, perhaps. Maybe a sequel to Casino with Robert De Niro, perhaps. Certainly would fit in quite well there with his slacks and his alligator shoes. But yeah, moving on to another story involving the Ryder Cup, which you mentioned there, you touched on there briefly. The Ryder Cup will be at Hazeltine next year in Minnesota. And this is an interesting story in their Par 5 news here. The local organizers behind the Ryder Cup at Hazeltine next year recently attempted to pitch money from the state's new budget for logistical assistance and sponsorship. And their pitch was made late, just days, in fact, before lawmakers completed their 2015 legislative session, asking for between $600,000 and $2 million, depending on the state's involvement in the Ryder Cup. And the Associated Press obtained emails and written letters detailing the exchanges between the two sides, illustrating the scramble from event organizers and the hesitancy from the state about agreeing to any proposal. In May, in one of these letters, the Minnesota Tourism Director, John Edmond, wrote to colleagues, they want $1.5 million from the state. Get real. It's not in our interest. They want us more than we want them. However, the pitch did remain in play with the legislator and the governor until the very end of the session, but nothing concrete came from it. And this argument's going to continue on for the coming months, I suspect, as Republican Representative John Hope, who district includes Hazeltine, admitted that they should have begun pushing for funds sooner with more transparency in their approach than they did. And Patrick Hunt, who is chairman of the Ryder Cup Host Committee for 2016, stated that rather than seeking a traditional subsidy, they were actually offering the state ways to maximize the way in which they can embrace the international exposure that the event generates, with the event being broadcast in over 160 countries around the world, with an internationally diverse spectrum of 250,000 spectators expected to descend upon the region next year. So a big opportunity for Minnesota to promote itself to the wider public across the world. They say it's an issue will be lightly addressed again early next year when the next state budget comes up. But in the past, in 2008, the state of Kentucky allocated $1.5 million for security and logistical expenses at the 2008 Ryder Cup. So there's a precedent for state involvement within these competitions, these events. However, in the end, no matter what happens in this debate, the Ryder Cup will be at Hazeltine in 2016. And Fred, I believe you're going to close our Par 6 news tonight, something a bit extra special at the end involving a certain Tiger Woods and an ex, Mrs. Amanda Duffner.
Yeah, well, you know, again, in an even more seedy news from the drama series that has become the PGA Tour, you know, we reported at the top of the show that Tiger rebounded this week at the Greenbrier and posted his lowest round of the year of the 66 on Thursday, made the cut, and finished T32 for his best finish of the year. Well, he also made some news last week with a report in the National Enquirer, of all places, that he had spent time with Amanda Boyd. You remember her, Kieran, Jason Duffner's ex-wife. You know, loves to post selfies all over Facebook and Instagram. The Enquirer reported that Woods' infatuation and trysts with Miss Boyd caused the breakup of Woods and Olympic skier Lindsey Vonn. In a quote from the article, "Even though Tiger dated Lindsey for years, he had a thing for Amanda. At first, it was just an innocent flirting, but earlier this year, it became serious. Allegedly, Woods even sent the jet to pick up Amanda in Atlanta and bring her to Seattle when he was at the U.S. Open a couple of weeks ago." Woods' agent, Mark Steinberg, vehemently denies any relationship between Miss Boyd and Woods. He was quoted, "I couldn't deny this more vehemently. There is less than zero strand of truth to it, 100% false, 100% fabricated, and zero credence. Absolutely, unequivocally untrue. They're not even acquaintances. It's absolutely ridiculous." You know, Rene Russo worked wonders for Kevin Costner's golf game in the movie Tin Cup. And Tiger's game is beginning to come around, as evidenced this week in West Virginia. I'm just saying, Kieran, that wraps up the Par 5 news presented by United Golf Network. United Golf Network wants every golfer to enjoy the game more and save money while doing it. In addition to name brand products, one of the perks of United Golf Network is automatic membership to MyGolf in U.S., which offers discounted rounds of golf in 16 states and 3 Canadian provinces. Kieran, I just had someone tell me about a golf trip they were on to Myrtle Beach just last week. They played the top-of-the-line golf courses for as little as $30 a round, including cart, drinks, and sandwich. Matter of fact, they played Oyster Bay in their rotation, which is one of the Legend's all-inclusive properties down there at Myrtle Beach. Really, really wonderful golf courses, high-rated since it's been open. Everyone just raves about the property. They were impressed with the course as well as the amenities and raved about using MyGolf and U.S. packages. United Golf Network's motto is play golf, make money, enjoy life. Visit UnitedGolfNetwork.com today. Check out their opportunity, and you could be playing top-of-the-line golf courses for less money. Kieran, let's move on to our very important guest segment. I am so excited. Our man inside the ropes, Jeff Minor, worked overtime this week at the U.S. Women's Open in Lancaster Country Club just outside of Philadelphia and has provided us with interviews from Natalie Galbus and Brooke Henderson. Natalie, as you know, has been one of the big stars on the LPGA Tour for 15 years, and Brooke Henderson just won on the Sumatra Tour and is trying to her way onto the LPGA Tour for next season. So our first interview is going to be with Natalie Galbus. She's playing in her 14th U.S. Open. So, Vincent, if you would please roll that audio for us.
I'm back here at the seventh plane of the U.S. Open with one of my favorite players and people of all time, Natalie Galbus. Natalie, congratulations. You played yourself back into the U.S. Open. This is your 14th appearance.
Yes, I'm very excited to be here and just looking forward to my... I don't really think about it being 14th, but just another chance at playing in an Open. These are my favorite weeks all year.
Do you know that that has put you in the top six of all-time active players?
No, I didn't. That's awesome.
So
wow, that's incredible.
Your playing was incredible, too. Tell me about that first day around that you had.
Oh, that was a while ago. It was good. There was 90 players for 2 spots and didn't have anything to lose. I knew I had to shoot quite a few under. And I think it's a different type of expectation when you're playing 90 players for 2 spots than when you're playing a regular tournament.
You ended up setting a course record.
I did, which I didn't realize until after you play that they tell you that. But it was a great golf course and very tough golf course, and just excited to be here.
It took you a little time to finish the second round, though.
It did. It went over into the second day. I ended up having to finish on Tuesday and going into... going into a second day. It was a long few days, and I was in the middle of a stretch of 4 events.
Well, earlier this year, you said this was going to be your last full-time season on the LPGA Tour, and for me, that's been out here working since 2005. That's kind of makes you sad because you've been one of the great ambassadors for the women's golf. You never have a frown on your face. You're always smiling. You never say no to anybody, and you stand for hours giving autographs.
Well, I play golf for a living, so that's certainly a good start, but I have been out here for 15 years, and would like to start a family, and I don't know how long that's going to take, but just don't want to do the 30-35 weeks of travel. I'll still be playing on tour, just not in a full capacity.
Any aspirations of doing a little TV?
I did television for Fox the last 2 weeks for the other 2 U.S. Opens, one in my hometown of Sacramento and one for the men's open, and that was really fun, so we'll see what happens there.
Well, I hope so, because this game would be sad without you. We all enjoy you. We're going to miss you.
I'll be in the game. Not going anywhere, but I definitely will be in some different roles. But hey, I'm still playing on tour. So.
Yes. Have you been on this course yet?
I have.
What do you think of that 18th green and fairway?
I have not played the back nine. I've only played the front nine, so I'm heading out to play the back nine right
now. I've been hearing from some of the girls that they said they can't even reach it into.
That would... doesn't surprise me. You always have to have a couple of those holes that are the very challenging ones in the open, and you have to hit 2 great shots to even get there. So I'm not surprised. But the golf course is in perfect shape. I'm sure the USGA is very pleased with how good it looks. You've been out there, you know it's perfect.
Oh, it's a macro, yeah, it's macro condition, but it's going to be a tough one. So, hey, I really appreciate your time, and good luck out there.
Thank you.
All right, back.
That was Natalie Galbus at the U.S. Women's Open at Lancaster Country Club, just outside of Philadelphia. Kieran, any comments on Natalie Galbus?
Well, I was just amused by that last comment there about the 18th hole and how some of the women aren't able to reach the hole in two. And that, to me, that just screams typical USGA, really, making impossible course setups at times. But, you know, obviously, Natalie Galbus has been a very popular player in the LPGA Tour for a number of years now, so it'll be a shame to see her draw down her schedule in the coming years. But certainly she's had a big part of the tour for the past decade.
Yeah, you know, she kind of carried the ball for a while there, you know, and kept interest in the game. And now the LPGA Tour is in such a great place with young players, so she can kind of step back, doesn't have to carry the burden all by herself, so that's great. Hey, our second interview, as you mentioned earlier, Brooke Henderson is having such a great year, just 17 years old. Besides winning at South Bend on the Sumatra Tour a couple weeks ago, she's earned over $350,000 on the LPGA Tour and is trying to earn enough to avoid Q School. She qualified for a spot in the U.S. Open this week, finished top 10 at the last LPGA Tour major at the KPMG Women's PGA Championship, and was given an exemption into the Ricoh Women's British Open next month. So, Vincent, if you would, please roll the audio with Brooke Henderson.
Back here at the seventh playing of the Women's U.S. Open, and I'm here with the familiar face I've seen on the Sumatra Tour is Brooke Henderson. Brooke, you've had a crazy year. You applied for a Q School exemption, and they wouldn't give it to you. And you've been playing in quite a few events, and you won a few weeks ago on the Sumatra Tour. How's that feel?
Yeah, it's been an amazing journey, and I think everything happens for a reason. So when I was denied last year, I knew it was for a greater purpose. And this year, I've had a lot of great finishes, and it's really been a confidence booster, finishing third out in San Francisco, and then T5 at the second major of the year down at KPMG. And it's been a lot of fun, and I'm really excited to be playing here this week.
Yeah, because if you would have made that birdie putt, you would have went into a three-way playoff. So so you're playing well. Now I'm an instructor also, and I've been looking at your swing. And I'm envious because you look like you've been out there doing it forever. I mean, I don't see much of a flaw in anything you're doing. Is there anything in particular you think that you need work on, or are you pretty confident in everything?
I'm very confident with my game right now. I know I still have a long way to go, and I'm still a long way from where I want to be, but I think if I can just focus on short game, you know, the girls out here, they're so good with their short game, and that's something that I can definitely work on and improve. But if I just stay patient and keep getting more consistent, I think good things will happen.
You got someone familiar on your bag this week?
Yeah, I do. My oldest sister, Brittany, who also plays on the Sumatra Tour, is caddying for me this week, and she's a great caddy and an even better person, and I'm really happy to have her.
She's going to probably really appreciate going up and down those hills this week.
Yeah, it's pretty hilly for her, and the bag's pretty heavy, so I'll try and lighten it up a little bit.
You've been on the course. What do you think?
Beautiful. Beautiful course. Very tough, though, and I think it'll be a great challenge for all the girls out here this week because you really got to be smart with where you place your shots, especially around the greens. But it's a great challenge, especially for the U.S. Open.
Well, it was congratulations. You know, it was kind of bittersweet for me 3 weeks ago in South Bend because Dottie Ardina is one of my students and staff players, and so you came back through on the back nine, but I don't root against anybody, but when you can put a back nine together like you did, you deserve to win, so congratulations on that.
Oh, thank you so much.
Good luck this week.
Thank you.
That was it, the interview with one of the hottest players, young players on the LPGA Tour this year, Brooke Henderson. Any comments, Kieran, on Brooke?
Yeah, just say obviously she's very impressive what she's done this year in terms of her record and getting that first win, but obviously playing well at the Women's PGA as well. So see if you can carry that form into the U.S. Women's Open, obviously a very tough course, a very big test, as always, you know, arguably the biggest event in the women's game. So we'll see how she gets on there. Obviously at the Women's British Open in 3 weeks' time should be interesting. But certainly one of these great young players. You said there, Natalie Galbus, you know, kind of moving down a little bit. All these great young players coming through now. Lydia Ko obviously leading that pack, but there's so many behind her. Charlie Hull and Brooke Henderson is just another one of those great young players that are really taking the LPGA Tour and the women's game as a whole to the next level.
Yeah, I'm estimating that she's going to need around maybe just a little bit over $500,000 in earnings to earn her tour card for next year. She needs to finish inside the top 40 at the end of the year. She's going to have limited starts for the rest of the year. She's already announced that she's going to forgo playing on the Canadian Pan Am team to come and play in the qualifier for the Marathon Classic on Monday. Actually, she'll leave Lancaster and come over here. So she's really trying to do that without having to go to Q school. And, you know, if she can have a good finish this week, if she can have a good finish in the Rico Women's British, you know, she very well could pull it off. So I want to mention also that the TV times for the U.S. Women's Open this week, it's Fox Sports 1 has the first and second rounds, and it's from 2 p.m. to 7 p.m. on Thursday and Friday. Then on the weekend, Fox picks up the coverage. It's 2 to 6 p.m. on Saturday and 2 to 6:30 p.m. on Sunday. You can also go to the USGA.org website and view live streaming. That wraps up our very important guest segment with two great interviews this evening. So let's take a short break for eDraft. And Vincent, back to you, sir.
Thank you for listening. We'll be right back. In the meantime, don't forget to visit www.edraft.com for analysis, breaking news, and more. Also, remember to follow us on Twitter at edraftsports and on Facebook at facebook.com/edraftsports. Don't forget to check out our co-hosts on Twitter by clicking their names in the episode description. Now, back to the show.
Kieran, amazingly, we are on time. Carlos is going to be so proud of us, and we have arrived at the practice range segment, and we're going to talk a little bit about the golf that is moving to your neck of the woods for the next couple weeks. We've got the run-up to the Open Championship in 2 weeks and with the Scottish Open this week, so I'm going to ask you some questions and just kind of let you pontificate on these subjects. So my first question to you, should Jordan Spieth have skipped the John Deere Classic this week to prepare for the Open at St. Andrews next week?
Well, that's an interesting question. It's obviously been very much debated and discussed in the past couple of weeks, but it's a bit complicated. I think, firstly, we should respect him for honouring his commitment to the John Deere Classic. He made a commitment to that event, and he's stuck with that, and that's something to be respected. But in term, if he wants to win the Open Championship next week at St. Andrews, I think it's fair to say that perhaps he should have come over early, in the sense that, you know, to get acclimatized himself, not just to playing links golf, which is a completely different way of playing the game, completely different strategy required psychologically as well as technically, but also adjusting yourself to the time difference can have a big effect as well. He'll be flying in on Sunday evening on a charter flight from John Deere, arriving in the UK about a Monday afternoon, our time here. And you know, and suddenly you're thrust into the tournament. You have the press conference. Obviously, with potentially no Rory McIlroy in the field, all the attention will be on Jordan Spieth. He'll have very little time to himself in those 2 days leading up to the Open. So his preparation is certainly not ideal. I think if he wanted to give himself the best chance, and he could still win the Open, but to give himself the best chance of winning the Open, I think he should have come over early, go around the country, play some links courses in Scotland, England, maybe even Ireland. A lot of players do that. Tiger does that. And get an early look at the old course at St. Andrews. It's a course that has to be learned. It's nuanced. It's a kind of a quirky old course in many ways. You have to play it and walk it many times to get a rough understanding of how to play it. He's played it once, I believe, before the Walker Cup in 2007. So he has very limited experience of the old course. He's playing it, I believe, on a simulator at home and trying to get some view of the visuals required when you play there. But I think to give himself the best chance of winning the Open and completing that third leg of the Grand Slam, he should have perhaps left the John Deere, said, I'll come back next year and I'll play there, and hopefully I think they would respect that decision. But in the end, he's made a commitment, he's stuck to that commitment, so I respect him for that, but I think he's perhaps made the wrong decision.
You make a really good point, too. Without Rory there to deflect some of the media attention, there will be more pressure on Jordan for interviews and time away from what he needs to do. So, second question for you, loss of Rory effect to the Scottish and the Open Championship. maybe economically and just from tension there in your part of the world?
Well, I'm pretty sure that if you lose the world number one player in any sport, it's going to affect the event negatively. And certainly for the Scottish Open, the Open Championship will obviously it'll have a massive attendance anyway from people who've already bought tickets and will buy tickets on the week. But the Scottish Open obviously is competing with that market as such in the same kind of fortnight. And certainly it'll impact Gates. I think there's no doubt about that. Rory McIlroy being in the field is a massive draw. And it's a shame for him and a shame for us as viewers of the game. We wanted to see him go at the Old Course trying to win the Open. He's a great record there. I believe his scoring average for his last 10 rounds at the Old Course is 69. So that's 12 under. He shot that in four rounds. He'd be very hard to beat next week. So he's missed an opportunity there. And we've missed an opportunity, potentially, a great battle between him and Jordan Spieth and maybe someone else there. So it's a very disappointing for everyone concerned, but the Scottish Open has a great field still and a lot of great players there, Justin Rose, Phil Mickelson, Ricky Fowler. So it's an event that's very, you know, it's a strong event, it's going to be well attended, but certainly losing the world number one player is going to affect anything negatively, that's for sure.
You said you've been to the courses. What are the condition of the courses heading into the next 2 weeks?
Well, I was in St. Andrews on Friday and I walked the Old Course, all 18 holes from tee to green. And actually, I couldn't find some of the tees, so they've hidden the back tees away behind grandstands and all kinds of things, trying to extend the length of the course as much as possible. But the golf courses are looking very good. Gullin as well is looking very good. But the thing is, we've had a very wet summer, believe it or not, in Scotland, even more than usual. And the golf courses are very green. The Old Course is looking much greener than it would normally. It's in great condition. The greens look fantastic. But it's lush. It's green. So it's not perhaps going to play like Muirfield did a couple of years ago when it was completely baked out and hard. It's not going to be like Hoylake in 2006. It's going to be a softer Open Championship venue, so in the end you expect scoring to be even lower. But certainly, the challenge of the Old Course will always remain, avoiding the bunkers, which may be easier now, less run the fairways. But if they get some dry weather in the coming week, then the course might firm it a little bit, but I think the weather forecast is a little bit mixed. So I expect the Old Course to play fairly soft this year, so if there's no wind, it will be really low scoring. We could see maybe 18, 19 under par winning the championship. I might even see the first 62 in a major championship. I wouldn't be surprised if that happened next week at all. But for Gullin, it's a great venue. The golf course is one of the best conditioned in Scotland at the best times. Obviously, for this championship, it's a real, they've put their effort in even more. It's one of the kind of underrated links courses in Scotland and certainly one of the best in that area. Muirfield, which is literally across the water from Gullin, it's a great area for golf. So many great golf courses and one stretch of coastline, so much so it's called Scotland's Gulf Coast. But Gullin is a great venue. It's a composite course of number one. There's three courses at Gullin. Number one is the main course. 16 holes from that will be used for the Scottish Open this week and two holes from number two. So a mixed course, but one of the players, I think, who have been there so far and have practiced and played there, have certainly enjoyed it. And I think good weather this week, it should be another low-scoring event, but certainly a good warm-up for the guys ahead of the Open Championship next week.
You said it's soft there, so
yeah.
What about St. Andrews doesn't necessarily lend itself to bombers. You know, Tiger has done well there, and some of the long ball guys. But, what do you think? Dustin Johnson, Bubba Watson, do you see them doing well next week there?
I think the Old Course does lend itself to longer hitters. Obviously, that's not always the case. Nick Faldo wasn't a massively long hitter, even for such a big man. But you look at Tiger, Louis Oosthuizen, Jack Nicklaus even. These are the guys that hit the ball a long way. Obviously, there's a lot of strategy required. There are 118 bunkers in the golf course, many of them placed in some really awkward places. You have to avoid them. Of course, when Tiger won the Open in 2000, he didn't find a single bunker, which is one of the most remarkable stats of his career. Obviously, there's not a great deal of rough in the course. It is thicker than normal in places, but generally, there's a lot of room at the Old Course to move your way around. The golf course is mostly about angles. So, obviously, well, you're always told you play the Old Course to hit down the left side. That's a safe line. You avoid most of the bunkers hitting down the left side of the fairways, but you have the harder second shot. So, guys like Dustin Johnson, Bubba Watson, they can take on the aggressive line, fly many of these bunkers. If there's no wind, I think they'll score very well. But in the end, the Old Course, it has a real knack for identifying the best player or one of the best players in the world. And there's a few exceptions to that rule, obviously, Kel Nagel in 1960 and even Louis Oosthuizen in 2010. But generally speaking, the person who wins at the Old Course is, at that time, one of, if not the very best player in the world, and I expect that to happen. Rory's not going to be there, so Jordan Spieth, he could be the man, but Dustin Johnson is a great player in form. Bubba Watson, so these are all the leading players in the game. and I expect all those guys to be in contention on Sunday.
I'll get you one more question here. Do you see a Ricky Fowler or a Justin Rose being a factor either this week in the Scottish or next week in the Open Championship?
Well, Ricky Fowler's obviously had a bit of a lean spell since he won the Players' Championship, missed a couple of cuts, missed a cut in the US Open terribly, had a real struggle there. But Ricky, you know, he's a good record on links courses. He played well at St Andrews in his debut 5 years ago. He played well at Royal St George's in really terrible weather in 2011. Obviously finished second last year at Hoylake to Rory McIlroy. So he's a guy, he embraces the challenge of links golf, he enjoys it. So certainly he's got a real good chance, and he's fortunate he can find his game back to what it was back in May. And certainly he could be a contender. Justin Rose, I think he's a guy who might be the one that could come through and win either the Open or the PGA at Whistling Straits. I think he's someone who's quietly going about his business, in very good form right now, came close at Memorial. I think he's been to the old course the last couple of days. He's practiced there. He's walked the course. He's played it. He's playing at Scottish Open, obviously defending this week. So I think Justin might not win this week, but I think he'll be a factor in perhaps both these weeks, certainly the old course. But both those guys could be good outside bets, certainly.
That wraps up our practice range for this evening. Really great points, Kieran. That's really good stuff there. Great information for our listeners. Let's move right into the final putt section, and Kieran, I'll let you go first. You've got a couple of items for us.
Yes, I do, and obviously it's a great period of golf in Britain with the Scottish Open, the Open Championship, the Women's British Open, the Women's Scottish Open, but we also have the Senior Open Championship at the Old Course of Sunningdale. And usually we think of the Open Championship, the Senior Open, being played at links courses, but this year it's going to be played at a Heathland inland course in England, Sunningdale, which is one of the very finest in the world. And it previously hosted the Senior Open back in 2009, where Lauren Roberts won. Always the highlight of the sporting calendar in this country, and it's got a great field as always. Bernard Langer's going to be there, Fred Couples, Colin Montgomery, Tom Watson, Nick Faldo, and Jeff Maggart, who obviously recently won the US Senior Open, are all going to be there. So it's going to be a great event at Sunningdale in a couple of weeks' time. And for Tom Watson, obviously playing his final Open Championship next week at St Andrews, then he's going to try and win the Senior Open for a fourth time. And going back in time, there's a story in the Scotsman newspaper over here that one of the earliest books of formal golf rules will be sold at an auction at the very exclusive Eden Club at Pitmorey Castle near St Andrews during the Open Championship. And the book was written back in 1824 at the Thistle Club, who had playing rights at the Leaf Links in Edinburgh. And the lot also includes a prize medal from 1822. And all this lot from the Leaf Links and the Thistle Club is expected to fetch up to £30,000 or potentially £50,000. So, Fred, you know, some rich person with more money than sense will no doubt go in there and snap these items up. And you know what? Maybe it'll be Donald Trump.
I thought maybe you'd be in the bidding there. That's you could just pop over there and put a couple quid in there.
Absolutely, Fred. You know, I can casually spend £50,000 easily, willy-nilly. I can just throw it away quite comfortably. I can do a fill, just go in there, $2 million, no problem.
Hey,
I wish that was true.
Here on the home front, a power couple, Tom and Giselle Brady, want to join the country club at Brookline. Just how exclusive is the country club? Well, we're about to find out. The Patriots quarterback and his supermodel spouse, whose mansion is just an errant tee shot away, want to join. But it's not clear if the club is famous, is famous for understatement and very quiet, very subdued atmosphere. They may not want the glamorous couple as members. The 133-year-old institution prizes its privacy and discretion above all else. And Brady and his wife are often trailed by paparazzi, occasionally controversy. Who's ever going to forget the Deflategate? Attract the sort of attention abhorred by the multimillionaires who belong to the Primrose Playground on Chestnut Hill. And also, Kieran, the PGA of America announced last week that the 2017 PGA Professional National Championship will head to Oregon's majestic Sun River Resort in Bend, Oregon. I've been there. It is stunning. Mountain views everywhere you turn. Just a couple more real quick items before we close. You've got the web.com extended a sponsor's exemption to a retired Army corporal, Chad Pfeiffer, who is an Idaho native, into the Albertsons Boise Open on the web.com tour. He'll be the first veteran amputee to play in an official web.com tour event. Pfeiffer lost his leg in April 2007 when a roadside bomb blew up a vehicle he was in. Pfeiffer won the 2010 National Amputee Golf Championship along with three wins at the George W. Bush Warrior Open for wounded veterans. He's played on the Gateway Tour and eGolf Tour events and was in the Big Break, the Palm Beaches, Florida episode on the Golf Channel. And also, Kieran, I don't know, maybe you were part of the buying group that bought this, but it's reported that Glenn Eagle, site of the 2014 Ryder Cup, sold for $234 million. Hey, golf fans, I want to thank you for listening to the Back Nine Report. I hope you enjoyed our take on the golf news for July 7th, 2015. Thanks to my super co-host, Kieran Clark. And as always, we appreciate your insight and information from the European perspective. Kieran, thanks a lot for being with us tonight.
It's been a pleasure, Fred, as always. Thank you.
Tune in next Tuesday evening for the preview to the Open Championship at St. Andrews. And we're going to try and cajole Mr. Clark to join us again for that, if we can get him
I'll stay up till
2 o'clock in the morning. What's that?
I'll be there. I'll be on the show. I'll attach a caffeine drip to my arm. I'll be there.
We will look forward to it. And that's the show for tonight. And Vincent, take it away, please.